Welcome all of you fellow arcanists out there to the Frith Guild podcast, where we explore an amazing world full of mystical creatures and their partners. Our hosts are Eric Smith and Scott Wareham, and they'll be your guides along this journey through death and dragons. So grab your eldrin, strap on your swords, and get ready to defend the Argo Empire from evil. Throughout this series, if you have not caught up to the chapters being discussed today, we urge you to hit the pause button, grab a copy of this wonderful book, and catch up. We'll be here when you get back.
Dan Mackeson here, and instead of a step from the Pillar of Bruma, or a quote from the book, I'd like to depart from the format a bit and make a personal observation. Volk is a kind, courageous person, but he is utterly devoted to doing the right thing. So much so that when there is no clear right and wrong, like how to deal with multiple women flirting with him, he freezes up. The flip side of that is when there is a clear right and wrong, Volk will always choose the correct course of action, no matter what that decision costs him. And there's the tragedy there. So,
without further ado, let's get into chapters 36 through 40 of Dread Pirate Arcanist.
Welcome back to the Frith Guild podcast. My name is Eric.
And I'm co-host Scott.
And today we'll be diving into chapters 36 through 40 of the Sovereign Dragon Tournament. Before we get into the actual chapters themselves, just wanted to thank everybody for listening. And I would like to ask everyone to show us some love by liking, commenting, sharing, rating, or whatever platform you're listening to. And if you're listening outside of the U.S. or comment, let us know where you're listening from. We're always curious to see. We also want to mention that the Frith Chronicles wiki link is in the description, along with the link for the Capital Station Discord server, just in case you wanted to go over there and join in on the conversation. And finally, I want to mention that the Crown Tournament 2 by Shami Stovall and Ryan Tang will be coming out on May 8th of 2024. So if you're listening to this on the date of release, it'll be 1 week from the date of this episode releasing. With that, we're going to dive on into Chapter 36, Dreams of the Past.
We left off last time Volk had joined the Steelthorn Inquisitors on a mission to get rid of some plague-ridden creatures. They finish their mission and kill both the Eldrin and the Arcanus, and the Grandmaster finally lowers his eclipse aura. Volk had refused to join the Steelthorn Inquisitors and instead opted to stay with the Frith Guild. So he's leaving to go back to the guild. And as he shadow steps, the first thing he notices is that it hurts again.
That's sad. I mean, he's got that taste of not having to hurt from the eclipse aura. But then Volk is like, I'm basically a darkness dolphin.
It's a great way to think of it.
Right.
Lucian is the other Nightmare Arcanist that was there with them, and he is trying to convince Volk to abandon the Frith Guild. He is also not a fan of Zelfry. He thinks he's a lowlife. So this is Volk now hearing this from Lucian. This is Volk hearing it from Fane before as well. So it's definitely causing some discomfort with Volk, and he just wants to better understand what the situation is. He returns to the inn, and Zelfry is, of course, waiting there for him. And Zelfry is honestly surprised that he didn't leave the guild. They start talking a little bit about the auras, mainly that the eclipse aura was in effect and Volk was able to gain power from it. And he asks about the mimic aura. And it's what's called a chimera aura. And it essentially allows Zelfry to pick and choose pieces from multiple different mythical creatures to form into one super cool evolved form mimic, so he can take different abilities from different mystical creatures, which is very cool. In addition to talking through the different auras, Volk also does confront Zelfry on the different rumors, and Zelfry is very open and honest with him. He confirms that he did kill the Marshal of the Seas. He confirmed that he does benefit from the different rumors that are going around. He still has kind of the pirate rep going, so he gets some back channel information that he wouldn't have otherwise access to. So he still maintains that just because of the ancillary benefits that it brings with it. Volk is really excited to share this with Fane to try and encourage Fane to think Zelfry's a better person. I don't know how much he's going to buy into that, but he's really trying to foster a friendship there.
He just wants everybody to get along, okay?
Why can't we all be friends?
Well, and this is part of why Volk believes that Zelfri is definitely not the person that everybody thinks he is, because Zelfri cares too much for his Brennuses.
He really does. We saw it in the first few books. He was up in arms anytime one of them was in danger.
Like, he literally had to kill his best friend at the end of the first book because he was trying to protect his apprentice. He crawled in the bottle for several decades because of it, like numerous occasions. It's hard to truly believe that Zelfri is this renegade as everybody believes him to be.
Mm-hmm. And it's tough because so much that information, Volk is the only one that knows, or even the other apprentice knows. Why not widely known that he killed Ruma? It's not widely known that he's a drunk, or that might be widely known, but it might not be widely known why he's a drunk. So there's quite a bit that he is keeping from the broader society. Volk, having confronted Zelfri and feeling better about the situation, he goes to visit Adelgis, and it really looks like he's getting worse. Volk ends up falling asleep in the hospital room, and he has this very strange dream where he is reliving the leech being removed from Adelgis, but it's from Adelgis's point of view. So he's able to hear the conversations as they happened, and he learns that Thiessen didn't want Adelgis to join the Frith Guild, that Adelgis was also supposed to be gathering information on Mimic Arcanus, and specifically how to bond with a Mimic. He understands that despite everything that's happened, Adelgis does still want to train under Zelfri. The final moment of it, Thiessen actually rips the leech away from his body after the leech had threatened to hurt Adelgis more because it didn't want to stop feeding.
This is kind of weird. I can imagine this slimy, like, blood-covered leech just like, no. And my only thought was, why didn't Thiessen just put the leech in stasis like he did with everything else? Like, at least with Adelgis. Like, wouldn't that have been the easier solution?
It seems like it. And I almost think he didn't because he doesn't care what the outcome is. Like, if Adelgis is hurt, it doesn't really bother him. So it's like, sure, whatever happens, happens. Let's see. Like, that's the only reason I can piece from it, just based on everything else and how he's treated Adelgis in other situations as well.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of the, as long as the leech is fine, he doesn't give a crap about anything else.
Yeah, it's strange, and it's a hard point of view to shift to.
Definitely makes you feel for Adelgis.
Oh, yeah. And all he wants is to get his, father's pride and joy and praise, and that's never coming to him.
Yeah.
That does bring us to Chapter 37, which is the Tournament Round 2. So when Volk wakes up, he realizes that Felicity actually gave Volk the dream while he was asleep. So this is something that Adelgis is able to do, and Adelgis has done in the past, and Felicity can also do, is to make memories into dreams when people are sleeping, or to even control the dreams that they're having so that they have a restful or not so restful. Volk is preparing for the match. He checks his book to see if there's any information on the leech, but there really isn't anything, which Volk feels is strange because Thiessen obviously knows a lot about the leech.
With Volk checking books so often, I'm starting to think he's sounding a lot like Hermione from Harry Potter. Like, going to the library every 5 seconds.
He carries it around with him before his big Quidditch match. He's fully dedicated.
At least it doesn't write back to him, okay?
that's when you got to be concerned. So, in reading about Ethereal Whelks, just to better understand some of Felicity's magic, he does learn that they gain power by consuming star shards. So this is something cool where they're not stuck in a single tier. They can be different tier level just based on the number of star shards that they've consumed. Ilya shows up as well to Adelgis' room, and she brings flowers with her. And followed shortly after her is Zaxis, who is arguing with Nicolin. And the argument they're having is Nicolin wants Zaxis to swallow him, and then Nicolin can teleport out of his stomach, and it'll be this cool party trick that they'll be able to pull off.
Like, why? At least start something smaller, something that's not going to completely kill you. I don't even know how he's going to get Nicolin in his stomach.
Swallow it whole? Like, the rizzles are fuzzy. Like, that would have to just be an awful feeling in your mouth. But
what if it goes wrong?
Teleport with his whole throat out? I don't...
Or just teleport his axis completely?
Yes. It's not a well thought out plan. I will give him that. But it fits with Nicolin, so. The other funny moment that I picked out of this situation is Zaxxas refers to Ilya as his starfish. They grew up on an island, so it's...
Aww.
It is cute, but it is funny that that's his little pet name for her. And we learn Zaxxas actually has been coming to visit Adalgis every day, which is really cool and does mean a lot. He keeps trying his healing powers. They're not working, but he still hasn't given up hope. He still comes back every day, which I think shows a lot for how much he does care for the rest of the Frith Guild. Volk thinks Nero might be able to help. He has access to the lab. He was there when the leech was removed, so he's familiar with the situation. So Volk wants to reach out to him and just see if he'd be willing to do something to help his brother out of the situation.
Starting to get the feeling that trying to pull on their heartstrings is not like the best way to accomplish things.
The family doesn't really have a lot of heartstrings. Once they get to the arena, the next tourney match is announced, and lo and behold, Volk is supposed to fight Lucian, and Lucian's partner is a Manicore Arcanist, which would be very powerful in battle, so definitely a tough matchup for them. And Lucian also being extremely familiar with all of Volk's magic and capabilities. Before the match, Luther was going around trying to find Nero, but Nero is refusing to talk to everybody. He's completely focused on his match, so no progress on that end. The other kind of event that comes up is as they're about to go in and start their match, Lucian actually comes forward to the center of the ring and bows to him, which is a sign of respect towards somebody else in a duel. But he also offsets this by kind of slyly talking some trash and saying that he wants to embarrass them.
Lucian also proclaims that he really just wants to show that his Grandmaster is better than Volk's silly master. This isn't a competition. Never has it been a competition. Just out of nowhere, somebody made it a competition. So Volk's got like, fine, dude, I'll fight you. But like, why? Like, do we have to do this?
Everybody's coming for the Frith Guild because the Reaper Arcanist is coming for him as well, coming for Zelfri. So there's a lot of master-apprentice relationship drama going on.
I guess everybody's got to prove that theirs is better than everybody else's, I guess. A lot of pride here.
It's a lot of pride on the line, that's for sure. Chapter 38, which is Unexpected Strategy, brings us into the actual match. And when the match starts, the first thing that happens is the Manicore and the Arcanist both step out of the ring. First thing, no pressure, nothing happens. And Volk realizes that this was Lucian's plan, because if Lucian beats 2-on-1, then there's no way that they would be able to argue that Volk was better, that the Grandmaster was a better master. It's just his way to make the odds that much longer for him. Lucian does go in and cast his Eclipse Aura, which he has learned to do, even though Volk has not. It's something that the Steelthorn Inquisitors teach all their Nightmare Arcanists to start.
Lucian chooses Azir. Azir has a Dark Aura ability.
It does feel very Pokemon-esque. Volk does counteract this. He does grant Zaxxas Night Sight. And the other aspect that I don't know if Lucian took into effect or not, but he's also a Nightmare Arcanist, so the aura also empowers Volk, so he's getting the same benefits that Lucian is. So Lucian is kind of just spending all this energy so the crowd can't see what's going on. Zaxxas goes to his explosion fat pouches, but it doesn't really do much.
Not very effective.
Lucian grabs Zaxxas with the hooks and the chains and just yanks him out of the arena.
That was very effective.
He uses his tears to knock Foresight out of the arena.
That was also very effective.
And Volk is able to close the difference between them and use his sword to slash Lucian.
That was a critical hit.
He taps this off instead of using chains and whips and chains don't excite Volk. He's actually excited by a shadow net. So he throws this shadow net at Lucian and ends up trapping him and knocking him out of the arena. After the match, Zelfri is talking with Volk, and Zelfri mentions that Lucian's plan wasn't a really a good plan because the aura was depleting a lot of his strength, taking a lot of energy out of him, and that it's really more beneficial when there's a lot of Nightmare Arcanus. And since it was just him, there wasn't much benefit to him even having it.
Yeah, and I always wondered this myself of why did he choose to do this? Because like you said, he used all this energy and he didn't create his aura correctly. So he wasn't able to hold for very long. Volk takes him to town because he's so just concentrated on trying to keep this aura up that it does him no good. And it's kind of those, just why?
It really feels like a show-off move. He just wanted to be, he's the cool Arcanist that knows how to cast an aura already, and he's going to woo all the girls with it. It feels showboaty.
Right, like, oh, my mentor showed me this already. It's advanced stuff. Look at me.
I'm level 15, but I've already learned aura.
Volk's like the guy with a level like 60 Charizard at level 10.
He really is. He's got the extra magical weapons that just give him a huge advantage over everyone.
Nexus sits there and talks about his fireworks, and I mean, Zelfri does give him the pat on the back about how he's getting in the library and reading books because he figures out about the fireworks. And of course, Zaxxas is just like, no, I need to make them bigger.
More boom.
More boom.
That tracks for Zaxxas. So I can't right. fault him. And, you know, I can't really fault anyone for wanting bigger fireworks. So I fully support that endeavor. They do end up getting to the Ilya and Hexa fight two Yeti Arcanist. And we see some of the techniques that Hexa was talking with Volk about in play in this match. So Raisin does make a mode of toxic gas. So this does provide some separation between the groups. Hex is then able to poison the daggers and throw them. Ilya is able to stick with her practice con of teleporting around and stabbing with the poison dagger. So they do come away victorious as well. And as they're winning, Evianna sends guards down to Volk and has him report to the palace.
Dang it, Volk, what did you do? Like, getting the guards sent after you, having Evianna go after you, like, what the heck?
He's going to the principal's office.
Again. Like, lives there, basically.
He does. For saving her from a river.
From drowning, yeah. Like, this is the things he gets. So this leads us into chapter 39, A Duel to the Death. So as they get to the castle, he's dragged all the way to the castle. And even the guards even take him to like a certain place in the castle at the top of this stone spiral staircase. And Evian is there waiting. And she tells the guards to leave them all alone. So they start to descend down the spiral staircase. And I don't know why, but spiral staircases, nothing good is at the bottom of a spiral staircase.
It's always a dungeon.
Yeah, exactly. It's always a dungeon. So, you know, it can't be good. So as they keep getting lower and lower, Volk can start to feel the raw Nullstone that is in the area underneath the castle. And he's starting to kind of feel that like strangled, suffocated feeling. Evianna ends up leading him all the way to where Livia is training. Essentially, Evianna wants Volk to train Livia to win because she always sees that he finds a way to win. So therefore, he can show her a way to win. Volk is very confused about this whole situation because he's like, well, I'm sure there's probably other people that can train her. But okay, we find out that Livia is participating in the fight to the death to bond with the Sovereign Dragon. As folks walk in around this massive circular chamber, he notices there's piles and piles of bones just laying around the edges. And he even asks what they were, and they said that these are all the King Basilisk skeletons that the queen had ordered to be killed so that they wouldn't assassinate her. I mean, it makes sense. She might be a little paranoid. I think.
She's keeping these bones for her benefit as well. They are pieces of a mythical creature, so she could make artifacts out of King Basilisk magic, which I imagine would be extremely powerful.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, shoot. So these things are absolutely massive. The regular basilisk is fairly small. However, the King Basilisk, Volk says, could actually compare to the size of the Sovereign Dragons minus the wings.
Large and in charge. That's a big chicken snake.
Olivia must have been pissed at Eviana. Basically, she not only had Volk brought to her, but she had Volk brought to Eviana using the knights that isn't really supposed to be how it's done. Like, she says that's like kind of pretty much an abuse of power. So they're down there, and Volk and Livia, they're talking. They have a quick kind of conversation about the runestones. Volk's like, maybe there could be something we could do. Maybe not. We don't know.
And Livia, her mindset is that there really isn't a better place for them than in Thronehold, because you have the queen, you have the dragon. That is one heck of a first line of defense, not to mention everything else that's there in terms of the castle and the Nullstone, and I'm sure booby traps of all sorts.
Right. Just the Nullstone alone. And then let's not worry about the 500 ton dragon that it could eat us in one bite and not even think about it. Probably an appetizer. Yeah. It's like eating a potato chip.
It's an hors d'oeuvre.
So I'm sure the dragon would have no problem with that whatsoever.
No. So she has a very fair point.
Volk asked to speak with Olivia earlier in the first round, and Olivia didn't ever respond back to him. And he was kind of like, maybe she doesn't know where I am. Like, maybe, I don't know. Like, so she basically ghosts him, and he's talking with her about these runestones. And she's like, so wait, you're not here to talk to me about dissuading me from trying to bond with this sovereign dragon? And Volk's like, I honestly didn't even know that you were trying to. So Olivia actually got really like excited, and she kind of lit up at that point, because she, you know, she was happy that he wasn't going to try to. But Eviana comes back and is like, hey, come on, focus. We gotta train her. She's got to live. So let's stop wasting time and actually try to train her, please.
They don't really have a lot of time left before the ceremony.
Right. You're a few days, at most a week out from the ceremony, and you're just going to be like, okay, I need you to teach her in 30 minutes how to live.
Basically how to get lucky, because that's Volk's getaway a lot is just pure luck.
And luck in the sense of surviving, not Volk in lucky.
Yeah. Yes.
So Volk has her show him kind of what she knows. He even draws swords with her, and they start to duel a little bit. Livia is an actual complete badass with a sword. She even actually cuts Volk a few times. And I don't think Volk was like trying to let her, but again, just kind of testing the water, see what she knows. Volk notices a training deficiency for Livia in that she has never actually dueled with somebody or, you know, fought with swords with somebody else. They've only ever instructed her.
And this feels like a pretty big gap, given that the thing she has to do is fight somebody. Like, that is the one thing she actually has to do.
It's like being a boxer and never getting in the ring with anybody until, like, your first boxing match. Like,
it's a horrible preparation.
Right. And he even notices, because she's never had somebody to fight against, that she does the exact same thing every time. So he was able to figure that out within three bouts, and all of a sudden, like, he cut her arm or cut her shoulder. There's that like, oh crap moment, and, you know, he's like, maybe can you not say anything to anybody, please, because I don't want to get in trouble. Imagine his punishment from this, cutting her, when he had to spend a day in the dungeons for manhandling Eviana.
Yeah, that's going to be a rough go for him.
So Rishan, who is her brother and Eviana's brother, has slowly been eliminating other people from the Sovereign Dragon Trial of Worth. I guess there's five stages of this Trial of Worth ceremony, and he's slowly been causing people to get disqualified. I don't quite know how, but it's always been stated like they messed up, they're done, they can't continue, and like that's the end of it.
I just pictured like a crowbar to the knees type of deal going on.
Going mafia style.
Yeah, like. really showing them.
Again, we're seeing that Rashawn is a very power hungry autocrat and to the highest order, to be honest. And this is where chapter 40 starts at Heroes Save People. Don't give the company to Rashawn. Rashawn's a bad man. We find out that Rashawn has been a very cruel person since childbirth. Like, he's grown up. He probably hurt little animals. Like, let's be honest. Like, he should have been a Bogress Arcanist instead of going for the Sovereign Dragon, to be realistic.
He would have fit very well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, to the T. Probably would have got a true form Bogress as soon as he bonded. The reason Rashawn has been taking out his competition is so that he has a better chance of winning in the end of it, because at the end of the Trial War ceremony is basically a battle royale, last man standing wins the dragon, quite literally. This is one cool Trial of War ceremony because it doesn't matter who you are. You don't have to be royalty. You don't have to be a princess or a prince. There's a person that was an esquire's son that, you know, threw his name in the hat and accepted that what he could do and, you know, try to bond with this sovereign dragon. And if he did, then he would be a ruler because only the sovereign dragons rule the Argo Empire. So I will give them the fact that they give people of lower station this opportunity. So Livia asks what Volk would do in her position, and he's at a loss, honestly, because he's like, I probably would do the same thing that you're doing. I'd rather fight and die than to run and live.
And also not just have the thought of running away from that in your mind the whole time. That's tough to get away from. So you're bad on both ends at that point.
Exactly. And with Volk and Livia growing up with all these stories of heroes in the past, these heroes they read about wouldn't have done that, so they wouldn't have ran. They'd have gone against all odds to try to at least take it away.
I try and follow all my superhero from growing up as well, so.
Yeah, exactly. I still want to fly like Superman.
I'm waiting. Still waiting.
It's freaking evil people manipulating outcomes to ensure who they wanted to bond with and what kind of creature they wanted to bond with as well. This is just such a frustrating moment. They're the ones that are going out of their way to not follow the rules and try to bond. So these are the people that should not be bonding with others.
You're almost ensuring you get the worst candidate.
Right. So Volk debates telling Livia about the god creatures and is seriously debating with himself about going over if Guildmaster Eventide would allow Livia to bond with one of the god creatures. I feel like this is kind of that like too little too late kind of moment for this, because again, it's, you got less than a week left and it's literally just her and Rashawn for the Sovereign Dragon. So it's kind of that like, gonna have to do it.
Yeah, it's a tough point to be in. But like you said, she can't turn away at this point. She'd be running from herself.
It kind of clicked with me that this is literally the royal female version of Volk is what Livia is. This is the same person in a female body with a better start to life.
Yeah, they are perfect for each other.
Exactly. And then Volk says something and he tells her not to hesitate. Like, really, Volk? Really? You of all people are going to tell her to not hesitate?
She doesn't know that that's his weakness, so it's okay.
Like, talk about the pot calling the kettle black here.
I know.
Eviano does want Volk to keep her from participating if Volk can't teach her to win. This is where Volk is very mature about it, and he says that she's not a toddler grasping for the hot stove, nor is she nor is he her parent to swat her hand away. She's a consenting adult that is trying to do anything and everything she can to protect her kingdom. Again, Volk is like, I would do the exact same thing. I can't tell her not to do this if I would do the exact same thing. At this point, Eviana just like, fine, If you can't teach her anything else, then go. So Volk leaves, gets out of the castle, and ends up running into Lyle. And Volk's in a pretty piss poor mood at this point. A girl that he really likes is probably going to die in a week and can't really do anything about it because it's a decision he would make anyways. So he's sitting there on the trolley with Lyle. And you got to imagine Lyle's like just over the moon again because, oh my gosh, he just ran into Volk again. Like, this is the best thing ever.
Maybe I'll get to be famous again.
Exactly. Like, I'm friends with an Inquisitor as far as anybody's concerned. Volk asks Luthair, what would Mathis do? Or WWMD. And Luthair gives him the math that Mathis wouldn't have ended up in this position speech again.
Which is such a good default response. Be like, I don't know what to tell you, but Mathis wasn't this messed up.
Stop getting into these ridiculous situations.
And the other thing that I think is funny is it's now nighttime. They're together and Lyle's, hey, you don't have a coat. Here's one from the lost and found. Essentially.
I get to keep it if nobody claims it by the end of the night. So I've already got like 5 of these. Do you want it?
Seems like a nice coat though. Lots of pockets, big trench coat.
Well, it said it's a fishing coat. So I imagine so. Yeah. Lots of big pockets and probably fairly warm. Volk asked Lyle, where would a good like shady place to be? Where would you go if you're a shady person trying to find jobs to sell out to people? And Lyle says basically, oh, you want to go to the Smithy District. We're not really allowed or typically go through that area, so you know, that's probably like the best place to go.
It's not shady. We just don't patrol there or put out lights or do any of the things you normally do to keep an area safe.
Right. Yeah. Our guildmaster purposefully doesn't put our routes through that area. So you don't know why, but the Moonlight District, that place is not shady. And this is kind of where we end this week's chapters on. This is where we're going to jump right into our bestiary section. And this week we're going to go over the Grifter Crow and the Yeti. And starting with the Grifter Crow, these are small magical crows known for their illusion and sleight of hand magics. They're often found in circuses. We met a Grifter Crow Arcanist back in the second book on Port Crown. And these are just kind of that like shifty, seedy kind of people that you don't really want to associate yourself with very much. You'd set up a deal with them and they'd probably be like, okay, give me extra 10% for doing it for you kind of person. As far as the mythology goes from real world, I couldn't really find anything. So I'm not sure if there's a specific place that Shammy got this from or this particular mystical creature from. But again, we don't really know anything about it as far as real world mythology goes.
Hey, Eric, I asked Shammy on the Discord server and the real world inspiration for the Grifter Crow is Aesop's Fables.
As far as its Trial of Worth goes, we don't really know anything. Nor do we know anything about their reproduction. If I had to guess, make an educated guess, I would say it's probably a progeny born. As far as evocation, they can make sparkles.
Kesha would love them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Sparkles everywhere.
Glitter party.
We do know that as far as their manipulation goes, they are corvids, which are birds. They can control pretty much any kind of bird, like a crow, like a raven, magpies, that kind of thing. Can't necessarily control any bird, but again, they can control some other breeds of birds that are not magical. And this is, to be honestly, pretty much all we know about Grifter Crows.
The other one we're going to go through is the Yeti. So a little more information here. Mythology, they do come from Sherpa folklore. They're known as large giants covered in snow, with white fur that roam the north. They're often associated, if you think the Abominable Snowman, from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer specifically, is what I like to picture. But that is the same genre of creature. Their trial of worth is to survive one night at the peak of a mountain. They evocation, they're able to evoke ice, and we've seen this kind of covering the arena with ice. Not too much in terms of manipulation or augmentation that we know of, but passive abilities, they're immune to cold, resistant to heat magic. And their aura does create a blizzard aura, so a giant snowstorm in their area.
So if you like your winter sports, your skiing and your snowboarding and your snowmobiling, there you go. That's your mystical creature for you.
There it is.
And we do still have the stone golem to go over. I believe in our next section, we'll be going over that. We do want to thank everybody for listening today. We do want to remember that we do post new episodes every Wednesday morning, 11 Eastern, 10 Central, and 8 Pacific Standard Time. We are on all podcasting platforms that are available. We are on YouTube as well for videos. And we want to give a big thank you and shout out to our editor, Dan Mackison, for including pictures and links to everything. If you wanted to reach out to us, we are on Gmail at frithguildpod@gmail.com. Or we're on Facebook and any other social media at Frith Guild Podcast. We do want to thank the Frith Chronicles Wiki, as it is such a great resource. And I know as soon as the bestiary is released, whenever we get a release, and I know that the book has came out, Shammy has posted pictures of it all over on her social media, and it looks so pretty. Once the book has been released and those that have purchased it have gotten a chance to look at it, the Frith Chronicles Wiki will be updated, so we will have lots of new information, so keep an eye out for that. And just want to remind everybody that link to everything is down in the description below, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Scott, you got anything else?
More tournament coming.
All right. Thanks for listening.